Trash about the things we love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Hello, hello. We're back for a pop culture roundup.
I know, and we don't even have a Taylor Swift update, which is, I am surprised. I thought we would have gotten a photo dump.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued as to what the plan for all of this is.
Yeah.
Like, is she really just never going to release this content, or...
I'm worried she will do a documentary.
I mean, honestly, I would be thrilled with the documentary.
I think
that would be so interesting. And also, like, such a let them eat cake sort of energy of, like, here's me planning this, like, crazy wedding. Because we're learning, like, bits and pieces of information from guests or other things. And one of the most important pieces that I think has come out is somebody asked Zoran Mamdani, the mayor of New York, at a press conference if Taylor was going to be, like, paying for all of the police and stuff that she used. And she already paid over $160,000.
Yeah.
And that was just, you know, for, like, the road closure / police.
Yeah.
So that doesn't obviously take into consideration, like, renting Madison Square Garden and all of the vendors and everything in there. So it, like, really does give you a sense of, like, oh, this wedding was, like, millions of dollars.
Oh, I mean, yeah. The only question is how many tens of millions.
Mm-hmm.
But the drama that was born from the wedding is Jack Antonoff went alone. Margaret Qualley wasn't there.
Right.
He was overheard saying, oh, she's not here. We had a tiff. Gross. But the news broke this week that they are getting divorced.
Yes.
R.I.P. to Margaret Qualley and Jack Antonoff.
Which, like, felt like a weird couple from the beginning.
I know.
It felt ill-fated. To go from Lena Dunham to Margaret Qualley is a wild swing, I think.
Why?
And really, like, does not give you any sort of sense as to who Jack Antonoff is the person.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for nothing that we also have the clips from Famesick, Lena's latest memoir.
Yes.
Where she highlighted how her relationship with Jack was complicated because he was kind of obstinate, inflexible, tortured artist type who was stubborn and unwilling to compromise or consider other people's feelings, which isn't surprising to me and makes sense, you know, birds of a feather and all that. But no, they've been...
And then who was it who he was supposedly seeing afterwards? Because doesn't she mention something about seeing, like, how he went and, like, started hanging out with a pop star a lot or something like that?
Oh, well, famously, Lord.
Oh, yes, Lord. Yes, that's right.
Second album.
Yes.
Never verified if they were actually in a relationship or not. Gross.
Right.
But, yeah, heavily implied.
But weird vibes, nonetheless.
Weird vibes. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and then, like, for the last year, there's been, like, blind items about, like, Margaret Qualley, like, walking through Central Park crying and stuff, and all these, like, commentators, you know, supposed insiders saying, like, oh yeah, they're struggling, he's always working nights, she's always away filming, blah blah blah. So it didn't seem like the happiest, healthiest relationship even by Hollywood standards, but they're done. And actually, it was funny because the first news broke in a sort of vague, they're separating way. But then Jack was seen wearing his wedding green, like, very obviously on a pop walk. And then Margaret Qualley's team came out and said, no, they're divorcing. Like, it's done.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and also then there was like some other rumors or whatever that were sort of going, or things from sources that were going around. And then, yeah, Margaret probably was like, okay, nope, no, I'm putting the kibosh on this. So interesting. Interesting to see. We'll see what happens with
Margaret and Taylor stay friends? Just kidding. They never liked each other.
I'm like, yeah, that seems like a
that was the number one deal breaker, actually. That's what did them in.
I mean, as Charlie XCX has said, you know, having to see Taylor Swift backstage at your boyfriend's show is not a good time. So perhaps. Okay, anything else regarding this wedding or ephemera adjacent to it?
No, I think that was the only tie-in I had.
I would like to talk briefly about Moana, the live-action remake, which I did not see. No. Did you watch it? Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
So I considered it, I'd considered it for my daughter, but then I was like, you know what? The reviews are bad. I don't want to support this sort of effort on Disney's part, so I just bowed out.
Well, the reviews were bad, but also the box office was bad. It made significantly less than people thought it was going to. In the opening weekend, it was projected to make $140 million globally. It ended up only making $95 million globally, and that was on a budget of $250 million. So, this will end up making its money back at some point, especially when you factor in, like, toys and, you know, all of the other things Disney's that go on with Disney.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's interesting. This is the second lowest opening for a live-action remake behind Snow White, which happened just a couple of years ago. And I do think it sort of signals, as with the Mandalorian and Grogu like bad numbers, as with the Supergirl bad numbers, as with the bad numbers for some of the Marvel movies as of late, like, I think people are just sick of these franchise plays where the story's bad, there's nothing really interesting or new, it's just like clearly a cash grab on the part of the studio. And at the same time, you have things like Obsession and Backrooms and Project Hail Mary that are all doing really well at the box office. The Odyssey will presumably do well at the box office this weekend. So I just think we're maybe, hopefully, moving into a period where we're trying new things and people are realizing that the general public is hungry for new, exciting movies and not just like reboots of old things or like... Unless it's a really interesting, clever, well-done idea that feels important. So I was thrilled to see Moana do so poorly.
I know. And it really just speaks to, like, I mean, yeah, Disney doesn't care. They have so much money at this point from so many different iterations of its company that it's like they don't even feel embarrassed probably to lose money on something like this. Like, but it's just disrespectful to the artistry of, like, animation as a whole, because of course something like Moana works better as an animated film than trying to make it live action, because it's not like something like Cinderella or even Snow White where it's very, like, human centric. Like, so much of the joy of Moana is the beauty of, like, how the animated world plays into it, the humanistic qualities of the water or the silliness of the little coconut guys. Like, none of that's gonna, like, translate well. It just looks goofy. And every single shot I've seen of this movie, every single still, every single, like, clip, every single trailer, like, it just looks cheap because they're, like, doing it on, I don't know what they were thinking. Like, it's ugly to look at, and you're comparing it to one of the most beautifully animated films of, like, modern Disney. So it's just, and it's very recent in our memory. So it's like less than 10 years ago that we all saw Moana, that Moana was a huge hit. Less than 2 years ago that we sat through a bad, but at least pretty Moana sequel. And so it's like, how dumb do you think your audience is that you can just throw the Rock in a bad wig in front of a green screen and think you'll capture the same energy of the You're Welcome dance and the tattoo, you know, trip of the animated version. It's embarrassing for all involved.
I also just don't understand the move to do a live action remake, but then have so much of it be CG. Like, I mean, we've done this with a number of things, but if you want to do a Moana live action remake and set it in Hawaii and shoot on location and have all of these beautiful vistas and have these big dance numbers with, you know, a bunch of like live dancers, like on a beach somewhere in the Heights kind of style shoot, like, great. That does sound like it has a certain appeal to it. But when you're going to give me a quote unquote live action remake that's clearly all shot on a green screen where there's not really any sets or like statement pieces or things shot on location. It's like, what's the point of this? Like, we can just watch.
You have the CGI pig. You have the CGI chicken. You have the CGI transitions for Maui. It's like,
right.
Ick.
And I don't think, like, Disney, when we were growing up, you know, would put a movie away for a while and then re-release it from the vault so you could watch it again. And it would, you know, sort of build up a whole new audience. But you would just re-watch the same Moana over and over and over again, which I think children still do, like watch the same movie over and over and over again. So I don't understand why we need to sort of like remake the same movie when we could just re-watch the version that we already have that's good. Like, there's nothing additive coming to it.
I know. It's all
annoying.
It's all toy based. It's all merch based and probably Disney character based, like Disneyland parks. They're just like,
I do think that the theme park thing is a big part of it because every time you release another version of that movie, it like re-ups whatever that theme park ride is for another like 10, 20 years. Because it was sort of weird growing up going to Disney and being like, oh, there's a ride here from like the Song of the South or like for these movies that it's like, oh, I haven't seen this. I don't really know what this is, or this feels like really dated, especially things that weren't like classics that were just hanging around. And so I understand, like, okay, if you had a if you had a ride right now that was like a Bug's Life ride, let's say, at Disney World. Like, I love Bug's Life. That's a great movie, but it is sort of like, okay, when, like, a Bug's Life came out in what, like, 2002? Like, there's been no sequels. It does feel like a little bit strange, I guess, to have a ride there for that. But at the same time, it's like, well, then kids can go there, ride the ride, be like, wait, I love this ride, and then go like watch the movie. So it's not that crazy. Anyways, we've gone down this rant like 500 times on this podcast, so don't want to belabor the point.
Okay, well, if you want to rant some more, curious how you feel about the Emmy noms.
Oh my gosh, I completely forgot that the Emmy noms happened, that we haven't talked about those yet. In general, I just feel like TV not good right now. I don't know if it's something where like I'm just older now, so I'm sort of like tired of things, or I'm more focused on movies, or if it's just the TV landscape is spread so thin. But I was looking at this list of nominations, and everything either feels like a show that like nobody really watches, but sort of got in just because like, you know, people have heard of it, or it's something that has been on for a bazillion years that is going to keep getting nominated until it ends. Like, in the drama category, the nominees for Best Drama Series are The Diplomat, The Gilded Age, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, Paradise, The Pit, Pluribus, Slow Horses, and Your Friend and Neighbors. Like, I know that The Pit is a big hit. Like, a lot of people watch that. That obviously did really well. But I'm like,
Pluribus is huge, too.
I guess so. But I'm like, I haven't watched any of these series.
But you don't watch TV.
Well, I mean, yes, but like there was a time where I felt compelled to watch a lot of shows because a lot of people were talking about them. But it's like, I've never heard anyone talk about the Diplomat. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, I know people watched, but it's, you know, it's like a Game of Thrones spinoff. I feel like that's sort of doing whatever. Like, I don't know anybody who watches Your Friend and Neighbors. Slow Horses, a lot of like old people watch, but I don't know of if like it's like people's parents watch Slow Horses.
My book club's like favorite show.
Okay, well, great, sure, that makes sense. Like Paradise, A Gilded Age, Pluribus, like people are watching those. Yeah. But none of these feel like appointment television.
Oh yeah. It seems like a bygone era. It's like there's so much now that even a big show, it feels like a niche audience still.
Like the only three shows that were nominated in sort of any of these categories, or I guess four, that I think have some sort of like cultural cachet are The Pit, Hacks, the JFK Jr. love story version. I feel like a lot of people were like obsessed with him and Carolyn Bessette for a bit earlier this year. And then Widow's Bay, which I think a lot of people are watching now, which I haven't watched yet, but I really want to watch. Funny. And it's like everybody's watching, everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
Like those feel like true, like, yes, this should be nominated for an Emmy. But most of those are in categories sort of by themselves. Mm. And so there's like no competition. You know, it's like The Pit's going to win everything in drama.
Well, yeah, probably, season two wasn't as good, I think. So there's an argument.
Right, but I don't think it's fallen off yet enough for, and like, because the thing with Emmys is that no one has watched all of these shows. Like, I defy you to find an Emmy voter who is up to date on all, 20 of these shows that were nominated across these three main categories. So it's like, you are voting for the things that you have watched.
You know what? The Pluribus is going to win. 100%. It's going to outseat The Pit.
I don't think
I'd put money on that. No, okay, Pluribus is a very respected, like, everyone was obsessed with it. It's new. It's fresh. It's like very, I would be shocked if it doesn't win.
Okay. Well, we shall see.
I'm putting that on the record.
Okay. Shelby's going on the record.
And in comedy, the question is if Widow's Bay will pull off a surprise. No. Just because it's new and fresh and on people's minds.
It's Hacks' last season, and Hacks' last season was good.
Yeah.
And I think that there's just no way of beating that. This is like the year that Schitt's Creek ended. And it was like, everybody loves Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
Schitt's Creek is ending. Everybody wants to give another award to all of these people on their way out.
Yeah. No, that's true. But I stand by Pluribus. It's a dark horse, but it could pull it off if anyone could. But I agree it'll probably be Hacks. But it was fun that Matthew Rhys was nominated for both dramatic actor and comedy actor for
his
dual roles this year.
Yes, in Widow's Bay and The Beast in Me.
And I think those are the only
you're like, that's all I care about. I'm like looking, I'm looking through the list now. I mean, Meg Stalter got nominated for Hacks, which I was excited about. Like,
I know, but Patricia from Widow's Bay is also so good.
Right, but Hannah Einbinder is actually going to win that category, so it sort of doesn't matter who else was good.
Yeah.
Like, I think Hannah Einbinder, Jean Smart winning. Like, does Widow's Bay have somebody in lead? Oh, well, I guess Matthew Rhys. He'll win for that, I think, because Hacks doesn't have somebody in lead actor.
Yeah.
The real thing, I think, is that The Bear sort of flopped. Like, it got a couple of nominations, but not a ton.
Yeah.
But even that and that's has been for like bad
season,
for
that's for season four, four or is that for season five?
No, that's for season four.
Yeah.
But it's like nobody really liked seasons three or four, and yet it's still getting wait, did you like them? You thought those seasons were good?
Oh. I mean, I think I ranked them 2-1 3-5-4. So four wasn't the best.
Okay. Well,
generally,
but it's getting nominated nonetheless.
I mean, I still think it's like great. Like, I think it's very worthy of a nomination. But I think generally people, they just don't get it. They're just like, this isn't a comedy. And it's like, yes, it is. It's just dark.
Okay, Shelby coming out in support of The Bear and Pluribus on this episode. You know what I was disappointed didn't get any nominations? The Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins, which I think is such a funny show. And Daniel Radcliffe, Tracy Morgan, like there's a lot of good performances in there. And I understand the comedy categories, I think, are a little bit more packed just because you have Hacks and Widow's Bay, and then obviously like the Abbott Elementary slash Only Murders in the Building, like people who just get nominated every year.
But and what's then, the other comedy show?
And then The Bear.
Right.
So it's Abbott Elementary, The Bear, Hacks, Margo's Got Money Trouble. That's like one. That's like one of the newer ones. Nobody Wants This. Only Murders in the Building.
Shrinking, Nobody Wants This Day. Was nominated.
Yes, for the second season, which I think people didn't like as much, right?
I don't know. I just can't believe that. I'm. You know what? I didn't look that closely, but I am Justice for Reggie. That's disappointing. That's tasteless.
Justice for Reggie. Okay. Justice for Reggie. Also, Jury Duty really didn't get very nominations.
Well,
many nominations, which I liked.
I'm like, that makes sense.
Okay. Hateful.
Yeah.
You know what got 9 nominations? The Bad Bunny halftime show, though.
Oh, for what?
I don't know. You know, live, feature, live, whatever. Like,
the Emmys have 9,000 Taylor Swift categories. Got some, right?
What did she get nominated for?
Or
Taylor Swift, the final Eras. Taylor Swift, colon, the Eras Tour, colon, the final show on Disney Plus. Is that that's the concert film that you saw?
No, it's the one that came out after with the European tour.
Okay. Interesting. So she has 2 separate versions of the Eras Tour.
It was attached to the docuseries, so that was the final. Attached to the docuseries she did in December.
Interesting. How do we feel about Mariska Hargitay as the host?
Oh, I didn't know. That's random, but you know what? I saw her clips of her on the podcast with Amy Poehler, and she does seem more funny than I ever knew. Because all I know her from is clips from Law and Order.
Do you think Taylor Swift will go to the Emmys now that she has some things nominated, and also her bestie Mariska Hargitay, who she named a cat after, is going to be the host?
She named her cat after her character.
Well, right, yes.
I don't think she'd have any reason to go, because it's not like those random under the line things are ever televised.
Yeah, I guess those are at the Creative Arts Emmys, which she's probably not going to anyways.
I would honestly see her doing that more, you know, pivoting to a more serious auteur element.
Going there to try to win the
yeah.
I don't even know what it would be, like costume awards or something. It's not writing, and she didn't direct it, I don't think, did she?
No, of course not.
I'm like, can I see? I'm like, can I look at are the nominations on the Wikipedia page somewhere? I want to see what they got nominated for. Accolades. Primetime Emmys. Okay, here we go. Here's what she could win for. Outstanding Variety Special pre-recorded. Outstanding Directing for a Variety Special. Outstanding Picture Editing for Variety Programming. Outstanding sound mixing for a variety series or special, and outstanding technical directions and camera work for a special.
Nice. Support the arts. Yeah. Right.
So unclear what
she'll be there.
Yeah. Does she already has an Emmy, I assume? Yes.
I have no idea. What would she have had it for?
I don't know. Taylor Swift have an Emmy? Yes. Taylor Swift has 1 Emmy. She won her first Emmy in 2015 for Outstanding Creative Achievement in Interactive Media for Amex Unstaged, colon, Taylor Swift Experience.
So, nice.
So she's on her way to that Hacks-style EGOT. Yeah. Now she just needs to do... well, I guess she already has the Grammy, so then what? The fact that she hasn't produced a Broadway show is shocking. That feels like an easy win for her.
Yeah.
Like, just put some money into 5 different musicals next year, and she's got that one in the bag.
Yeah. Well, she likes her own art. She likes controlling a thing. I don't think she cares to have her name on something random, you know?
Right. But, like, she could pick something that's sort of, like, is
she did trademark, I believe, Feminist Rage the Musical after fans started referring to her Tortured Poets Department section of her Eras Tour as such.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, so maybe she's working on a jukebox musical.
She could eat, like, her music would be perfect for a jukebox musical, actually. She has so many songs to choose from, and they're all, like, such story-based.
They're very narrative, yeah.
Yes.
No, it would be epic. The problem would be picking, like, you know, culling the songs.
Yeah, I guess so.
But no, that would be huge. Like, that would be such a moneymaker. Like, just imagine the hordes of Swifties. Like, it's unbelievable. It would be... I don't even think it'd have to be good, you know?
No, it would not have to be good to make money. It would have to be good to earn Tonys, though, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? What else do we have to discuss for the pop culture?
There's hope yet that the Warner Brothers Paramount, what's it called?
Oh, the like merger or the takeover or whatever.
A bunch of states have sued for antitrust issues, but we'll see.
They tried to do this with publishing companies a couple of years ago. And it didn't go through.
Now,
it was a different government, but if we're speaking about government issues, things are looking worse and worse for the Republicans every day. And the fact that Lindsey Graham just died this weekend and that Mitch McConnell is posting strange sort of ransom note-esque photos of him holding a newspaper in the hospital bed.
Yeah.
Like, it's not boding well.
You're such an optimist. It's really a beautiful thing.
I mean, I
love that for you.
Like,
you're worldly.
I keep looking at like the midterm polls and stuff. Like, everything is going bad. It doesn't look like I don't know what could. I mean, knock on wood. Like, obviously, something can always happen. But it's like nobody in the Republican Party seems to recognize the fact that like they're down horribly in the polls and are trying to make any sort of pivot to change things. I just read an article this week. I can't remember what newspaper was in, but like an actual, like a real paper that was saying that they think that Donald Trump is just going to quit being president after the midterms, which I was like, that feels far-fetched.
This is a real newspaper.
Well, I mean, it was like an opinion. It obviously wasn't based on stats, but you know what I mean? Like somebody wrote a letter to the editor that was like, I think that Donald Trump is such like a sore loser and like being president isn't going to be fun for him if he can't like do anything anymore. And he just has you know, and he can't run again at this point. Mm. So like, what's the purpose of him like hanging on for 2 years if he could just like peace out and say, hey, JD, you have to run this now. But I do think that, you know, I think if Republicans wanted to push through big, crazy things, they sort of need to have done that already. And I feel like this trust thing seems like something that could get shot down. Like, not even enough Republicans really want this to happen. Like, I don't think this is popular with anybody.
Maybe
certain, like, sort of corrupt politicians, but I think if you poll like regular people on the street who are Republicans, it's not like this is a really.
I don't know if they care. Yeah,
no, I think they either don't care or they don't want it. Yeah. I don't think that there's very many people in the United States who are like, yes, you know what I would love is to have like this merging of these two giant media conglomerates. Like, I think the only people who are excited about this are the
ones in charge.
Yes. Like, I don't even think employees at these businesses want this to go through because a bunch of them are going to get laid off if it does.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a bad idea. But it's also, there's a lot of powerful people who do want it.
No, but I think that if you're on a team, if you're on sort of a sinking ship and you're like, okay, which of these sort of ideas that we have in the pot, like, could we cut bait on?
Yeah.
This feels like one that you could slash before like trans bathrooms, for example, which feels like something that the DOJ there are more people.
Already. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. There's one more line of defense. So we love to see it.
Okay. We shall see. We shall see. You know, I try to bring a little optimism to the podcast here. Every now and
then. Yeah.
Okay. Can I talk about my love it or hate it?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Big Brother is back.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's been a minute. It's been a minute, Matt.
I was sort of, you know, I go back and forth whether I want to watch Big Brother or whether I don't. Yeah. But they brought back one of my favorite contestants this season, Angela, this like 52-year-old woman who's always on the verge of a meltdown and is just like a gem to watch. Mm. So they brought her back. I was like, I have to watch this. And last season, so of the like Big Brother players in Big Brother history, probably the most famous or one of the most famous is Rachel Riley. She was on a season of The Traitors. She's been on 3 seasons of Big Brother now. She won one of them. She was on last season of Big Brother and got screwed over by a twist, like, I don't know, a little over halfway through the game, and everybody was really pissed and mad and, you know, whatever. So at the beginning of this season that's airing currently, they set up that the theme of the season is like time travel. Like, we're going to be doing time traveling. And also that they're bringing in 3 sort of reality TV icons who are going to be competing. And so they bring in the first one, Angela, this woman, that this mom that I love. And then they bring in this guy from Survivor. And then they bring in Rachel Riley as the third. And everybody in the house is gagged, but also everybody online is gagged because there were no rumors that she was coming back. And she literally just played last season. And, you know, like, yeah, playing on a season of Survivor or on a Big Brother, you're trapped in this house for 100 days. So everyone was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy that she agreed to do it again, that they're keeping it secret, that they've kept it secret. Like, this is wild. And so you go through a good like 40 minutes of the episode, maybe a little bit less than that, like thinking that she is actually a player, and they're setting up this competition, sort of the first big competition of the season, that's going to be like caveman themed, and it's going to be the 3 sort of returning player people competing against each other. So, and this is at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, out of the bushes in the backyard when they compete, comes this giant velociraptor, which is clearly like somebody in a velociraptor suit.
Right.
And it sort of chases Rachel around the backyard and then up this volcano that is there like as a set piece in the background. And she falls into the volcano. And then they're like, oh my gosh, we're so sorry. Rachel Riley is dead. We can't, like, she won't be able to compete on this show. A velociraptor pushed her into a volcano. And Julie Chen comes on in all seriousness to deliver this news. And then is like, well, I'm going to have to find a different competitor to put on the show. But it was, and then during the credits of the episode, there's just a shot of like a skeleton, like in the like bubbling lava of the volcano in the backyard. It was so wacky and so campy and so funny. And I was like, this is exactly the type of deranged thing that I need happening on my reality TV screen. Like, I'm locked in now for the season. I'm obsessed. I'm like, great. This is the shenanigans I've been wanting to watch.
So it's just like a gag.
Yes, it was just a gag. But they spent like 40 minutes of the premiere episode on this gag that ended with someone like being pushed in a volcano by a velociraptor. It's absurd. It's incredible. Big Brother, the TV show that you are.
But now what do you have to watch for? Like, it just got you hooked. So now, even though you didn't know the other players.
And then they brought in this other woman from Survivor who had been on sort of like all of the rumored cast lists. So it was clearly just like a gag to sort of like get her in. And now it's like proceeding like normal. And my favorite cast member, Angela, is still there.
Right.
So I still have her to watch.
Yeah.
But I just love that they pulled this stunt.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I
was going to talk about reality TV too, because I finished Love Island season 8.
Oh, yes.
This weekend. I'm not sure if that show is for me, but I'm glad with who won, Trinity and Bryce. They're like the only likable characters on the show. And so I don't need to explain Love Island, and I know you don't watch it, so there's not much to talk about, but I did want to go on record with my predictions, because the final four couples were the winners, Trinity and Bryce, who both said I love you on the show, which I'm not sure, I don't think happens a lot, because again, this is a crazy show that makes no sense.
Well, and it films only over the course of a month.
Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah. So we got Trinity and Bryce, then we have Anaya and Carl, who were like a couple who came together halfway through the show. And then we had Melanie and Sincere, Sincere is one of the worst human beings I've ever
seen. Yeah, nobody liked him.
Awful. His nickname is either Insincere or Sinister, which I love. And then there was Kata and Zach, who I hate Zach so much. I don't think most of the world likes him. I think Kata is one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen. And so there's these four couples. They have a reunion show in 1 month, or like a month and a half, to kind of allow the real world to test these connections. I think Kata and Zach done. I think Melanie and Sincere, he will cheat on her and she will break up with him. And then they will either get back together again, or she'll have her I choose me moment at the reunion. It can go either way because she needs help. And then for Anaya and Carl, I do like them together, but I don't think they're going to last. Okay. None of these people are going to last for real, but I don't think they will last. I think they'll make it to the reunion, though. I think they'll make it the month and a half to the reunion. And Trinity and Bryce are going to get married and live happily ever after. So.
Yeah, it's interesting because so I haven't watched any Love Island, but for work purposes, I did sort of have to keep tabs on this season to sort of know who the people were and what the vibes were. And I feel like halfway through the season, it was like, oh, the winners are obviously going to be Trinity and Bryce. There's no other competition.
Yeah.
And then it sort of just like went to like steamrolled to that ending. Yeah. And in the past, I feel like I remember more like, oh, are you on team this or team that? Which didn't really seem to play out that much this season.
No, I think this season was really bad.
But I also didn't realize that it's only a month. I thought it was longer than that. And a month does feel crazy to me. And then the other weird thing is because you have to be in a pair on the show in order to stay. And like there is there is a little bit of like flip flopping at the beginning, but it feels like once you get a couple of weeks in, like you really need to be building your fan base if you're planning on winning the show. It's like you can't swap halfway through and then expect to win.
Well, so I think last year's winners were pretty
later. Well, then I also saw that there was like speculation that they are not together anymore, but they're like trying to hide that they're not together.
Very funny. That just goes to show you shouldn't make your personal life your brand, because it's just always going to be a toxic sludge. I think this show is not geared towards real commitment, which is not surprising, but I will say
the dating shows are.
I know, exactly. But and also it's like the influencer culture just isn't there anymore. Like the return on investment can't be that great. Like unless you're a breakout, like Sierra or Olandria, or, you know, like there's a chance of having a good life if you are number one most liked. But for any of these people, like watching their social numbers go up, like it's not that impressive. Most of them haven't even cracked like 500K, you know? And I'm curious, like, as the influencer machine kind of loses steam, like, how these dating shows will be impacted.
Well, it's interesting because, obviously, there's so many more reality TV stars now than there were, you know, 10 years ago. And then also there's so many more influencers than there are now than there were 10 years ago. Like both of those markets are completely saturated at this point.
Yeah.
And so it does take a lot more to push through that. And also I think people are just sort of getting a little bit tired of social media to a certain degree. Like you follow the people you follow. I think there's a harder barrier or a, like a thicker barrier to entry for like new follows. Because on Drag Race, this has been sort of a plot line the last couple of seasons, where it used to be that the winner of the season would have a million followers or whatever. And then in this season, it was like, oh, the winners have like 100,000 when they end, which is just so much lower. But if you're following drag queens, it's like, you don't want to be following 80 drag queens on Instagram. You probably only want to be following like 10 or 15 if you're like a big fan of that. Yeah. So you're not going to be following all of these people. And I think that's even more so with Love Island people, where it's like, what are they going to be posting? Like some bikini pics and some like SpawnCon stuff. Also, I don't know. Did you watch The Real Housewives of Rhode Island at all?
Just clips.
Because one of the Bachelorette winners.
Those are the clips I watched.
Yes, Ashley I.
Yeah.
Is on The Real Housewives of, or yeah, is on The Real Housewives of Rhode Island. She married a Bachelor contestant. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and they, and they're, I think they're both fairly well liked within the franchise. So you would think that of Bachelor stars, like they have to be sort of at the higher end of that influencing persona. Like they're both well-liked, they're both famous, and they're still together so that they, you know, have like mutual content that they can be making. And they have a couple of kids and whatnot. But like the plot for them on the show is that he has a coffee shop that he wants to open that isn't, or that is open, that isn't doing super well, and that she is doing influencer stuff, and that she is like, he could be making more money as an influencer than he is at this coffee shop. But then you get these clips of her as an influencer, and it's like, she's constantly shilling out stupid products to make money, where she's like, oh, I have to film a video with these fragrances. She was filming a video at the reunion of her like putting on lotion for a lotion company that was like she's sponsorship deal
for these SpawnCon.
So it's like, if that is what you have, like if that's what you have to do, and when you're at that level of fan, like stardom, like this season's worth of Love Island influencers do not stand a chance.
Oh,
and the
other
thing about being an influencer is that it is a new career. We haven't really seen how that's developed. Like in 10 years, is Ashley I still going to be able to make money off of being an influencer, or is she going to have to do something else? Because she won't have been on The Bachelor for a long time. And what does the pivot for that look like? Like, I guess now she's on The Real Housewives of Rhode Island. She could just try to like keep going on other reality shows. But you do, it does sort of feel like there's a, either a, there's a cutoff point for that of like, you can only be an influencer so long, or at the very least, there's going to be a narrowing of like, okay, the number of people who are over 50 who can be reality TV star influencers, you know, there's a very limited number of them, and they really have to have like 30 years worth of like good work behind them, where it's like, okay, you're Boston Rob, you've been on 10 different franchises, like people are obsessed with you, and people have just like known your life for so long that they're still invested. But I don't know that, like any of these reality TV show people on Love Island are going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You better have a backup career.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think it's also like thinking of early era Bachelor, you know, they have their social media accounts and they make money from it, but they also like learn how to diversify, and like they have their, you know, newsletters or classes or whatever. Like, it's all a grift. Everyone has to find a way to sell beyond just SpawnCon. And so, yeah, I think it's harder for these younger people to come out of fame, you know, because some of these cast members are like 22 years old. And it's like there's visions of them having the, living the big life, you know, having all the cars and the fashion and the Sierra, you know, sponsorship moments. But it's really hard to get there. So it is fascinating to kind of watch the B-listers kind of have to settle for what is still a good income, you know, but it's not the high life that they maybe envision, and kind of what do they do from there?
And so much of that is luck. Like, Sierra is famous. Because number one, Lindsay, whatever her name is, from Summer House, was supposed to go on the Traitors. And then she got pregnant, so she couldn't go. So Sierra got on the Traitors, which I think upped her profile a good bit.
Yeah.
And then she dates this person who decides to cheat on her in one of the most insane ways possible.
Exactly.
That makes her look incredible and completely destroys their two careers. Like, you just could never bank on any of those things happening. Exactly. Like, yes, she is a fun personality and I do like her. And so she has that going for her as an advantage. And also she's very pretty. But really the reason why she's this famous is because she was screwed over and she got lucky on a reality TV show.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Ariana Maddox. It's like the reason why she is famous is because she got like screwed over on a reality TV show that she super lucky on. Like if you think about people who were, or like Boston Rob, part of the reason why he is so famous is because he fell in love on Survivor and he's been married to this girl that he met on the show for 20 some years. Like that's again, super lucky. Most people do not find that even on dating reality TV shows. Like, so you really like have to have a super secret sauce. And if you think about like how many contestants were on Love Island this season, like 30 some, like, are any of them going to break out in a big way?
No, not at all. My pitch for a spinoff of Love Island is like After the Island. And not in a reunion way, but like following these couples, hidden camera style or something, to like see how it actually, how they actually attempt to make it work. And like, you know, like Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson style, like what are these couples actually thinking they have in common? Because they live all over the country or all over the world for one of the couples. They don't have real jobs. They're just out of college. Like, I would be so fascinated by all of that, especially after all these, like, high feelings of, like, we're going to be together forever. You guys are my best friends. I love you. Like, that's the reality I want, is them getting humbled real fast.
No, I mean, I definitely think there is a reality TV show to be had of like the behind the scenes lives of influencers because it is so much less glamorous than you think it is. And it's just wild the things that you have to do. Like the people who I know in New York who are influencers do not make it look fun when you know them as a person. Miserable. It's like this is like debasing.
I know.
I mean, even on Real Next Gen NYC, the, you know, sort of Real Housewives spinoff, there's a couple people on there who are influencers. And one of the girls was talking about how, like, yeah, like, basically she, like, she films content, like, from the moment that she wakes up to the end of the day because she's doing Get Ready With Me. She's, you know, doing day in the life videos. She's, like, she's constantly filming all this content. Then she has to, like, be sending all of these emails and negotiating on, like, brand deliverables with different people. So a lot of it's just email work and then filming random stuff. And then every night she has to go to an event or a dinner or whatever. Yeah. And then she has to wake up the next morning and do it all over again. It's, like, it's such a rat race. And it's, like, of that. And sure, you get to go to cool events. But even if you're going to cool events, you're turning it into work.
And you're competing with other people who are making the same event interesting.
No, which is crazy. Which is why I think that we need a reality TV series that is just like influencers. Like, like who can be the best influencer? Because I think that would be so fun to watch. Like, okay, you're all going to this concert. Like, who can make the best video? You know? Like, you all have to shill this terrible product. Like, who's going to get the best, the most clicks on like a
channel? Yeah, America's Next Top Influencer.
Yeah. I'd watch it. Get Tyra Banks on the phone.
Yeah. She's busy suing Netflix. But we'll find someone. Anyways, I did it. I watched a season. I don't know if I'll be back. But I do wish Trinity and Bryce well.
Well, now that you've watched the season of Love Island, you might as well watch the season of Big Brother, which, you know, is on less nights a week.
No way. No. No, thank you.
But there was dinosaurs, Shelby, and you love dinosaurs.
That's true. If it's a recurring theme, let me know.
Okay.
If every week someone's eaten by a dinosaur, maybe.
I would love that. Maybe that's how people will get eliminated on, on our influencer show.
Oh, yeah. Good idea.
Well, we'll be back Thursday for an episode on The Invite, which, you know, I'll be excited to ask Shelby about her swinging.
As a married couple. Yeah.
Well, and as a Mormon. Yeah. As an ex-Mormon.
Yes.
Swinging.
Yes.
Very big. So we'll be discussing that on Thursday. And the next week, of course, we have The Odyssey coming up. So lots of exciting stuff on the horizon. But thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back then. Bye.